Okay, so we're doing Parshas Toldos, and we said what we were trying to do the last few weeks. I'm going to try to see if we can tie it into the Parsha as well. We were going through the theme of the mitzvah, of the first mitzvah, the 613 mitzvahs, according to some of the counters, of the mitzvah of Puruvu, the mitzvah of the obligation to procreate. And we said that you have to have a boy and a girl, l'chachilo. Obviously, we don't have choices in this, but you have to have a boy and a girl. And we said, that's what we're going with, this small little halacha from the Ramah. The Ramah says that, by the way, you fulfill the obligation with a mamzer. That we'll see what a mamzer is. For example, the classic case would be a brother and a sister get together, they have a child, that child would count. That would be potential we'll get into as well. Then the next two he said, there's a chesh and a shoyta, someone who's blind, deaf, and developmentally disabled. And we discussed that as well. And then we said, the third thing the Ramah said was a katan, a minor. We discussed that as well. So now we're going to do a similar question that again becomes a strong debate. But before we get to that question, we're going to quote a Gemara. The Gemara says like this. We're talking about the concept of inheritances. Who gets to inherit what? So Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. This is on 18a in Kedushin. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Oyve Kechavim, a non-Jew, Yoyrish is Aviv. He is allowed to inherit his father, even though we said in the past we're not sure about 100% of his father, and we're really not sure how it works with accuracy about as far as inheritance goes. Is it automatic or is it not automatic? Maybe someone else can come and grab it first. So it says, no, a non-Jew inherits possessions of his father by Torah law. By Torah law, how do you know that? Because it says, Ki Yerusha, it's a pasuk we say in the Haggadah on Pesach night, that there's an inheritance to Esav. I gave him Mount Seir. Four. Rashi, commentary to the verse, meant that Esav inherited Mount Seir from Abraham. That's how the Rashi learns. How do you know a non-Jew inherits? Because Esav inherited from Abraham. Article correctly, nicely quotes the Rosh. The Rosh. The Rosh lived in the 1200s. The Rosh lived to died in 1327, if I remember correctly. The Rosh, however, writes, it doesn't mean the proof is Esav inherited from his father, but that Esav inherited his wealth to his kids. The last couple of days, they've been talking about Warren Buffett and all his inheritances. So it's a good thing for timely as well. So here you have a biblical law, a non-Jew inherits his father, either from Esav inheriting Abraham or Esav inheriting to his children. Correct me on the obvious question, I'm assuming.
Bequeathing to his
Bequeathing,
children.
yes. And obvious question Rosen's already about to ask, but wait a second. Talking about Esav. Perhaps Esav is an apostate Jew. Esav on bottom, the son of the patriarch Isaac, was guilty of idol worship among other crimes, but it wasn't necessarily that he was considered a non-Jew. The case of Esav with us not prove that a laws of inheritance apply to true Gentiles. Elamahach, he quotes a separate pasuk, pasuk six, also in Devarim, but also related to these parshas. Kilivnei Loit, Masatius Ar Yerusha. Loit was not considered a Jew, so if Loit inherited his kids. He bequeathed to his kids. That means non-Jews could inherit. The point is, we start out with a very simple idea. Can Esav be approved? And we have two ways to learn Esav. Esav inheriting it from his father, or Esav inheriting it to his children,
Bequeathing.
bequeathing to his children. And we say, well, there's no proof from Esav, because Esav's a Jew. He's just a Jew who did idol worship. We have a rule in Judaism. We have a rule in Judaism. Yisrael, a Jew, afal pi shechet, even though he's a sinner, Yisrael, he's still a Jew. As I said to you, remember years ago, someone wants to convert to Judaism, no backsies. You come in, you can't get out. So there's a concept of Jews, which we, and now, first you have to realize right away, there is a great debate we discussed many times in the past, where the Avos prior to Sinai had the laws of Jews and not Jews. Here, the Ramban, Nachmanides, says this is a proof that that we are referring to the Avos as Jews, because if the Avos were not considered Jews, then back to the proof. We should be able to bring proof again. So the fact that Gemara says, do not bring a proof from Esav, either going upward or downward, inheriting or bequeathing, means that we consider this line of people considered Jews even prior to Sinai. And we have no proof at all about non-Jews. We have a separate thing. But the main point we're bringing now is there's a concept that once a Jew, always a Jew. Now, it's also what, by the way, proof. Also, by the way, proof, an obvious question. Obvious question. If we're talking about Esav bequeathing to his kids, and we're saying that Esav is a Jewish sinner and he's a Jew, Judaism goes by which lineage? Maternal lineage. So that means Esav had to have married a Jew if this conversation is going on. Let's get this again. If you're learning Esav inheriting from Abraham, of course Esav's a Jew. Of course, that's a debate if pre-Sinai could ever be a Jew. But we're going to go that they're considered Jews prior to Sinai. Esav can't prove to a non-Jew. But if you're going to say it's Esav bequeathing to his kids, not based on Esav, based on his wife, wives, you must learn that his wives converted to Judaism prior to Sinai in order for this whole Talmudic passage to make sense. So we have two major events going on in this parasha related so far. What is Esav being born? Is Esav a classic Jew? Is he a twin of Jacob? Is he a Jew in Jewish law? If there's such existence, he's equal to Yaakov, whatever Yaakov is, he is. And the second thing, mind-blowing, you read this parasha. You read this parasha, you find out that Isaac went blind. Why did he go blind? Because the idol worshippers of these women in the house. But according to this Talmudic passage, if you learn the Talmudic passage is going on, bequeathing and not inheriting, then you have to learn, that Esav's wives converted to whatever Judaism was prior to Sinai. That was all a quick, as everything in this class is, introduction to the question we're about to get.
That's assuming that Esav was a Jew, but if he's not a Jew, there's no problem.
Correct. The Gemara says, but Dilma, perhaps an apostate Jew is different. Don't compare him to a non-Jew. So the Gemara says these words. Again, you can have other Gemaras otherwise. Since the Gemara refers to him as an apostate Jew, that means don't compare him to a non-Jew. That means there's Judaism in him. So this leads us to the question of an apostate Jew. That's how we made the stretch from the laws of procreation to this. So now we ask the question. We have spoken about, and we'll get to it more at length over the next few weeks, possibly. If a non-Jew has children with a non-Jewish woman, he has some familiar, whatever the word is, family relations, relationship to these kids. And it says openly, an argument of the Gemara, but we rule that if he then converts, he can count the children that he had prior to conversion. They count. We believe that once someone converts, he loses all family relations. Fine. But whatever it's going to be, it means at one point they were connected when they were both not Jewish. That was good enough for the laws of procreation. That works. That's an open Talmudic passage. Again, the Talmud has a debate, Rabbi Yochanan Shlokish. Do the converts' kids count? Rabbi Yochanan says they do. We rule like Rabbi Yochanan. You stop here, Tosfos, the Rishonim all learn this way. A non-Jew who converts, and he had kids when he was with a non-Jewish woman, and she did not convert, and the kids did not convert, Talmud seems to say that it works. Maimonides, the Rambam says, no. When you read the Talmud, it left out a crucial detail that you have to understand is there. In order for the children to count, they must have converted as well. So if the guy converts, the kids count, even though, wait a second, we're not related to those kids. And the whole family converts, they're not related to each other in Jewish law. They can technically marry each other because we don't have every convert's a brand new child. Yeah, but for the laws, it's not exactly that way. They can't. Either, we're going to have a debate now. Tosfos says the convert counts no matter what. Maimonides adds in, no, they have to convert as well. That's going from non-Jew to Jew. How do we count? So for a quick recap, since I'm talking a little quickly tonight. We started out with Esav. We don't know if he's a Jew or not Jew. Talmud seems to say he's an apostate Jew, and he has a chance of inheriting from his father, bequeathing to his kids, which would have to mean his wife is also converted. And because we have the concept, once a Jew, always a Jew. What about the laws of appropriation? About a convert? The argument, the Gemara, we rule that they do count. Rambam and Tosfos disagree. When do they count? Always or only to convert? 1600s. A man comes along and says, you know what? I'm going to say like this. What about the reverse direction, God forbid? Let's go to Abraham and Isaac and Esav. Esav, we will call an apostate Jew. I don't know exactly what the word means, apostate. What class of apostate? If someone has children who then are no longer religious, they will go extreme case. They convert. They take the, is it a crispy, a wafer? I don't know what they got to do. I think about a Muslim to go to the mikvah. Let's say a guy claims, we know that in Judaism, we just said no backsies, once a Jew, always a Jew. But maybe for the laws of procreation, it might be different. What about the child who considers himself no longer a Jew? Does that child count for the laws of procreation? So the Lavush, 1600s, comes along and says, yeah, I'll tell you like this. I'll tell you, of course it counts. Because what's the rule? Once a Jew, always a Jew. That's it. There's no such thing. We don't believe you converted. You can't convert. It doesn't make a difference. You can eat the wafer, go into the mikvah, do whatever you want. It doesn't make a difference. You're still a Jew. And if you're still a Jew, then your parents had Jewish children. That's what Lavush says. Now, let's go to Maimonides again. Maimonides, the Rambam says that the only way a non-Jew can count his non-Jewish children is if everyone converts together. Even though when they convert together, they're not technically related, but conversion makes it good. What's the idea of the Rambam? Tosfos says, the Gemara says nothing. When the guy converts, you had children when you were non-Jew, they were physically and biologically that you were attached to them. That's it. You created children. The world has populated. The idea proved with the population of the world. You populated the world. You became a Jew. Okay, fine. Guess what? You're lucky. You count those kids. As a non-Jew, maybe you were obligated, whatever you had some connection. You don't lose it by becoming a convert. Because, but the Rambam says, no. The Rambam says the only way you're going to count those kids is if the kids convert. So they want to say in the Rambam that the reason why the Rambam says the kids must convert is because the Rambam understands in order to count children for the laws of procreation, you need children who are obligated and are fulfilling the mitzvahs. That's what they want to learn in the Rambam. Therefore, if the kids don't convert, can't count them. Therefore, reverse situation, God forbid, that the guy says, I no longer keep Judaism. I officially went to the other side, even though we don't accept it, but he will never keep mitzvahs again. He is now going to the other places, the other houses of worship. Therefore, you shouldn't count it. According to the Rambam, this is what someone is saying. Since the Rambam required the converts' kids to convert, they're going to extrapolate the need for the kids to convert is because you need children that are also trying to fulfill mitzvahs. So if reverse, if you have a kid who does not try to fulfill mitzvahs, game over, can't count that kid. If the Rambam requires the kid to convert, that's the only way it counts, and the kid going the wrong direction will not count. Now, that's what some want to say. The obvious flaw, potentially, in that logic is very simple. You can say like this. Someone who converts wants to count his non-Jewish children, he's got a lot of negatives there. These kids were born as non-Jews. He was not a Jew for them. When he converted, he loses.
You convert, you've been such an interrupt. Talking about converting out of Judaism?
Into Judaism now.
Because you were just a second ago.
Right, we're going on both. Right. They want to bring a proof. The fact that the Rambam needs the child to convert in, which means we need someone fulfilling the mitzvahs, the child who converts out, therefore would not count. That's what they want to bring
up. If you believe that you can convert out, there's such a thing called converting out. Rambam believes there's such a thing called converting out?
No.
So that situation never occurs for Rambam.
Oh, so the question is, why did the Rambam need the kid to convert in, to count the kid? It means the Rambam requires a child who's trying to fulfill mitzvahs. Since the guy, not that he is a Jew, but he's trying the mitzvahs. The guy going outward, not trying, he loses his thing. But we're about to say, I think what you were saying. When a kid was born as a non-Jew, at that point, he wasn't obligated to anything. If you want to now count this kid, he's got to step up to the plate. Something that Haskell said last year about something else. Another. To get into the game, you need a bigger ticket. So that for the non-Jew to count as non-Jewish children, we're not going to allow it unless the non-Jewish children jump in. But a kid who's born Jewish remains Jewish no matter what. He doesn't have to try anymore. He already was Jewish. He doesn't have to try for mitzvahs. When the Rambam added the detail that the child must be trying for mitzvahs, it's because he's coming from nowhere. He's coming as a non-Jew. If the non-Jew wants to count a non-Jewish child that he's not even related to anymore at this point, because when he converts, he loses the child relationship. So the Rambam says, okay, listen, you're not really related to the guy. The kid was non-Jewish. You know what? You want to count this kid? The Gemara says, count this kid. I need something here. You know what you'll give me? He wants to do mitzvahs. But the kid who's born a Jew doesn't need this requirement that he wants to do mitzvahs. He's a Jew. He automatically counts. So again, we have the Lavush, 1600s or later, saying that a child who goes to the wrong direction automatically counts.
What is the wrong direction?
He no longer observes Judaism. He automatically counts. Why? Once a Jew, always a Jew. Esav is called a Jew in the Talmud. This week we're learning it. If Esav's a Jew, nobody's as bad as that. You count. Some want to say, no. Look at the Rambam. The Rambam says you need a potential trying to fulfill mitzvahs. And therefore, the child who says, I am no longer practicing, should not count. Us, in this room in 2024, I say, no, don't compare the two. The guy going from a non-Jew who wants to be counted for the pruvu, for the procreation, he needs something. Okay, you weren't born Jewish. Your father converted, so now you're not related to him. You know what? We'll give it to you if you're actually trying to be Jewish. But the one who's born Jewish automatically counts at all times and therefore nothing to discuss. So if we stop here, we remain with our original theory. A kid who does not practice religion still counts toward the father's fulfillment of the mitzvah. Next step. But sadly to say, not everyone agrees to this. Interesting to say is a better word. Interesting to say. So the first one is like this. The first rabbi wants to say, spiritual phrase. Many times you've had this phrase. The phrase in the Gemara's phrase is Rishoyim Kruyim Mason. Evil people, we refer to them as no longer alive. They're not living life. They're existing, if you could use an English phrase, but they're not living. Don't exist, live. And we believe that non-practicing people, but they might be breathing, but then we call attaching themselves to the eternal life, they're called dead people. And we have said, this rabbi from 100 years ago wants to say, less than 100 years ago actually, he wants to say, since we have a rule, this phrase is a musarvot, but it applies in 1,000 places, Rishoyim, Kruyim, Mason, evil people are considered as if they're no longer alive. And we already established a few weeks ago that God forbid a kid passes away, the father cannot fulfill the mitzvah with this kid anymore, unless he produced children. Therefore, he wants to say, we compare the Rasha to someone who's no longer alive. He's not living. He's only existing. That doesn't count. Therefore, the child who decides to change religions, he converts to a different religion. He is no longer practicing Judaism. He cannot count toward his father's mitzvah because he's equated with a dead guy. And a child who passed away doesn't count. The child who passed away doesn't count. The child who's existing but not actually living according to our standards, he's not called living, he does not count as well. He would argue on the theory we said before. Before we said, once a Jew, always a Jew. He said, once a Jew, always a Jew, only if you're actually alive. If you're no longer a Jew, you're no longer practicing, you're no longer here, you went to a different religion. So since you're no longer considered alive in Jewish law, in that situation, you can't count for the father's mitzvah as well. The problem with this, I'm taking too much information here, is that the Talmud says in many places, it is true. Someone who is evil, someone who is no good, doesn't count, is considered a dead person. But there's not the only person considered a dead person. Who else is considered a dead person?
Poor person.
A poor person.
As we learn in this week's Parsha. Next week's Parsha.
From?
Eliab Rab's.
Yes.
Yaakov.
From next week's Parsha, end of it, we have that. We have a rule, if that's such a word you can put it on, a citation in Shas many times that says someone who is poor is not considered alive. Someone who is blind is not considered alive. But we now going to say, now, that's not the same as an evil person. Evil person's in a few other places. But if you're using that logic that an evil person is not considered alive, he only exists, and therefore he can't count for the mitzvah of who, are you going to follow that logic to the end of the line and say, wait a second, if a guy has a child who's poor, he won't count either? If he was wealthy then lost his money, he's now no longer alive for the mitzvah of who? That's a tremendous stretch to say. So to say that in theory, in Musar, someone who's no longer practicing is considered no longer alive will translate to the law of procreation not to count him.
Too much, too far.
Sounds like a stretch. And just for the great Reb Chaim Shlevitz, we always love when we quote him here. He says, what's the reason? It's really in a total parenthesis right now. What's the reason a blind person and a poor person is not considered alive, we consider them dead? Because the natural tendency of people inside, sometimes way inside, is that they want to give over. They want to give. And someone who's poor, in the Talmud of time, someone who's blind, who couldn't function in society, pre-Helen Keller, as we keep on saying, they couldn't give to anybody. And if you're not a giver on any level, you're no longer considered alive in Jewish theology. In order to be alive, not just have to, you could be existing, but if you're not following mitzvahs, that's one way. But if you're not giving at all, and you're cool like taking, looks like everyone's thinking of somebody else right now. Everyone's thinking of their mother-in-laws.
No, I'm thinking of Yitzchak, who was blind, and he gave.
In fact.
He gave Yerusha.
In fact.
He gave his inheritance.
The rabbis.
He was totally blind.
Rashi says that at one point, we don't put God's name said about a person who's still alive. The Torah can't say the God of Moses when he's still alive, because you know what? God forbid something can happen, and he can no longer be the God of Moses. So after 80 years, one of the great Kahanim, the other one off. So you never put a name of God onto someone alive. But we do find in the Torah that at one point, Yitzchak has the name of God attached to him while he's still alive. And right away they ask, oh, what is going on? Why does Yitzchak get God's name when he's alive? We don't believe in that when people are alive. Someone could always make a mistake, a serious mistake. The answer given is because
that when he had become blind.
And he's blind on some levels, yes. Even though you're right, on some level Yitzchak existed 100%. When someone is blind, on some level he's considered no longer alive. His money can pass on. He's still obligated in many mitzvahs, not all, but he's still in many things. But now the question is, does he still count for a parent? Or if he's even born this way, it's hard to say. We're all in agreement. Even though I'm telling you this, Rabbi Pesach says it. Rabbi Pesach quotes from someone else who says it. Rabbi Pesach quotes someone else who says, P-O-S-E-K. He lived about 100 years ago.
Was he Pesach?
Yeah, also. Eliyahu Pesach.
Pesach.
His name was Eliyahu Pesach. Rabbi Eliyahu Pesach. Eliyahu Pesach quotes from someone else who says that someone who is no longer practicing, observing, who cares about Judaism, does not count. Why will he not count? Because we consider him only existing, not longer living. Us in 2024 could say, wait a second, Rabbi Pesach, are you going to also extend that to the blind guy? Worse, are you going to extend to the guy who lost his money? That sounds cruel. A little tough to say that. So we have to know where he balances it. Where does he balance on the person who goes off? Again, Lavush said, once a Jew, always a Jew. Some want to say, no, maybe the Rambam doesn't do this. The Rambam needs someone who's converting and trying to be religious. I'm saying, nah, that's not a proof. That's the guy converting to Judaism. He needs something. But otherwise, once a Jew, always a Jew. And then we reveal, oh, Pesach saying, no. The guy who's a Russia, the guy who's evil, is not considered alive, not because we don't, yes, once a Jew, always a Jew, but when a guy's no longer alive, he's no longer a Jew as well.
We took on the
Rabbi, question for you. You're obligated to have two children.
A boy and a girl.
Boy and a girl. Say you have a boy and a girl. One of them dies.
Yes.
Your wife is no longer capable of having another child. Are you obligated to divorce her and marry someone else?
Excellent. We are probably going to get to that in the next couple of weeks. That is actual question that came up to the Abbe Nezer 100 years ago, Sachachov. We will get to these type of questions. Right now, on the simple level, because otherwise we'll get too lost tonight, we have to also realize that, for example, just to show you a question, let's say the guy says, I will get married again. Does that prove he can't have children? Does that prove he can predict he'll have a girl again? So the myths of having children, which we're going to have to discuss as we go along, is very weird, because in the end, no one alive has the choice to have a boy and a girl, unless you're using IVF, but we're not even going to that. That might lead into that. But on a regular natural event, no one can predict when his wife will get pregnant. Not possible, but there's no actual prediction. And even if you can predict when the woman will get pregnant, predicting genders, again, they have all these voodoo stuff, but really unprovable stuff. So it becomes a major problem in general, how to fulfill this mitzvah. But yes, then we're going to have this question of Mitzvah Shem in the next couple of weeks with the Abenezer about the kid who passes away. Does the father have to redo it? We were a couple weeks ago, Stephen, you weren't here. A few weeks ago, we said that on the minor, we said if someone is born, the Ramah says, the day he's born, he counts as a child. So the guy has a boy and a girl. Let's say, make it easy, he has twins, the same second, a boy and a girl. Right then, he fulfilled his mitzvah. So we said, Chassel asked the question. Well, obviously, when else are you going to fulfill the mitzvah if not right away? So we said then, because this is a 1%, we didn't give a percent, percentage chance that these kids can't produce children. You would have to also produce children that are capable of producing children. So there's a 1% chance that when they hit 12 and 13 years old, they'll be proven capable. So we said, no, doesn't make a difference. You go by majority, and when every child is born, 99% of the kids, thank God, can have kids. Therefore, they can't count it right away. If at 22 years old, they're proven to be sterile, then at that point, they don't count anymore. But that would mean, and we said it then, Chaskel asked, if the guy has 25 kids, Mitzvah Shem, and then he finds that all 25 can't have kids, and now he's an older man, at this point in time, he's no longer fulfilling the mitzvah, because he produced a bunch of kids who can't produce kids, if he produced all sterile kids. And therefore, the mitzvah applies to him again. And then we have to know, which we didn't get into then, okay, if the mitzvah's on him again, and he's married to someone who no longer can have kids, what do we do then? We'll get to that eventually, probably.
So you're saying that this is a mitzvah that could last your whole life, not a one-time mitzvah, like you shake your lulav, you're done for the day.
Possible.
You hear shofar, you're done for the year. This is a mitzvah that every second of your life you're alive, you're obligated.
Well, Again,
As long as you put your child there in years, you're about 13 or 18.
No, so we're going to get to that in a few weeks as well. What the mitzvah is a question. But I don't. You're saying a little bit differently, which you probably mean what I'm about to modify. It's not that you fulfill the mitzvah, but you're obligated. That means, but once you have a boy and a girl, you're good until God forbid something happens. That's about most of the one. That you're obligated to have kids whenever the age starts. We'll get to the age eventually. Does it start at 13 or later? Because we don't expect people at 13 in today's world to get married and have kids. That'll be child abuse on the parents.
Say again, you've had your kids. Do you fulfill the mitzvah?
The moment the guy has a boy and a girl, when they're twins 1 second old, he fulfills the mitzvah. Now, it's a possibility that at a certain point, he will no longer, God forbid, fulfill the mitzvah. Something negative happens, and then he has to start over again. So the example could be of another mitzvah, let me think, that let's say a guy has an obligation to eat matzah, and he eats matzah. And then...
Next Pesach comes around. You gotta eat it.
Go extreme case. No. Same Pesach. Extreme case. He has a heart attack. He is dead, reshocked to life. Possible he has to do the mitzvah again. This new version of himself might not have been the guy who completed the mitzvah. So he has an hour to go. I wouldn't recommend the guy having a heart attack eating matzah as his first meal, but the obligation might begin. So there are certain mitzvahs that you're obligated, you fulfill, and then you realize in hindsight you didn't fulfill it. Prove who you want to know. So here we're discussing on a simpler case when the guy, the kid, goes off. Now we said, this is the unbelievable thing. We said a couple of years ago, Stephen, as well, that we said that it could be that you not only have to have a child that's capable of producing a child physically, not sterile. A sterile child, open Talmud of passage, would not count. Open Talmud of passage would not count. But you need potentially to have a child that can have a child through marriage. We discussed then certain people incapable of affecting a marriage. The DD, what was DD again?
Developmentally disabled.
Developmentally disabled. We assume someone extremely developmentally disabled is incapable of going through the correct halachic process of getting married. But it's very possible that physically they can produce a child, and it happens. Would that child count or not? That means, do you need the capability physically of producing a child, or do you need the capability of physically producing a child through marriage? See RabbiHuffman.com about 4 weeks ago.
Yeah, or both.
Or both, yeah. Anyway. Now the question becomes this. This is what Rabbi Posick also wants to say, and it's two wild ideas. His first wild idea was the guy who's not religious anymore is anti-religion, is not trying to observe mitzvahs, he's no longer considered alive. But the Rabbi Posick's second idea is that there is a Talmudic passage that says that someone who is openly non-observant, anti-religious, word in the Gemara was an apostate Jew, is not allowed, is incapable of affecting a marriage. If he's incapable of affecting a marriage, maybe he loses his right to be counted with the father because he's no longer capable of filling a marriage. We said you have to produce a child, maybe, he said maybe, you need to produce a child that physically can give birth within the confines of a marriage. If it's not within the confines of a marriage, then that child doesn't count. He's considered halachically sterile. He's not sterile. He can't produce a child. A developmentally disabled child can physically produce a child, but since he can't do it within the confines of a marriage, he's halachically considered sterile. It's Rabbi Posick wants to say, another wild idea from him, that a child who is no longer observant, openly anti-religious, cannot affect a marriage. If he goes over to a girl and says, and goes to a marriage ceremony, and there's a rabbi and the whole thing, according to some, that is just a farce. Nothing is actually occurring. You can't go and marry a wall. If you decide, I want to marry a wall, it doesn't work in Judaism. You cannot marry a wall. So you might be saying, wall, will you marry me? Obviously, nothing happens. You're not married to the wall. It doesn't affect anything. Even if you go through a process, it's irrelevant. You cannot marry a non-Jew. If a Jew and a non-Jew go under a canopy and go through the entire process of getting married, it's a very nice event, but they are not married in Jewish law under any circumstances. There's no effective way to marry a non-Jew. So some say you need a child who not only can physically produce children, but who can physically produce children through the marriage process. And since Rabbi Posek wants to say that a person who is no longer religious, who is apostate, anti-religious, according to some, he cannot affect the marriage, it's like marrying a non-Jew, which we all agree no one can marry. Therefore, this child who no longer observes can no longer be counted because he's now a child who is halachically sterile. He's not actually sterile, but he's considered like the developmentally disabled, potentially, who is maybe not counted. Now, we said last time that development of the disabled does count. We just said there was a question that potentially that would be an issue. Recapping. We have an apostate Jew from Esav. Our question again to our mitzvah, does an apostate Jew count with the parents fulfilling the mitzvah? First response has to be, like everyone said, once a Jew, always a Jew. Of course, he counts. Whatever he's thinking is irrelevant. Second point was that maybe the Rambam requires someone who's actively trying to fulfill mitzvahs. We said that that's irrelevant because that's talking about a non-Jew converting, but not about a Jew. Once a Jew, always a Jew. You don't need the extra additional requirement of wanting to fulfill mitzvahs. Then we said, well, maybe he's the child cannot count. Why? Because he's considered existing but not living. We said that's a little bit tough because poor people might be existing and not living. And that would be hard to understand that that would affect the father's fulfillment of the mitzvah of Puruvu. Then we said that, wait a second, maybe you need the fulfillment of Puruvu through a marriage ceremony. And someone who is no longer observant, who is anti-religious, cannot potentially go through a marriage ceremony. He now would be considered as a sterile child. We're going to stop here. We might continue this a little next week because it comes to the next week's parsha, I think. But this is classic lumbus tonight, guys. And we covered a lot of ground. If you walk through yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael at 23 years old, this might be, well, half would be a real class.